you can understand a lot about New Orleans by learning the stories behind its most famous cocktails, like the Sazerac and the Hurricane. Elizabeth Pierce joins us now to toast America's most spirited city in true New Orleans fashion. She's the author of Drink Dat, New Orleans, a guide to the best cocktail bars, neighborhood pubs, and all-night dives. Elizabeth also serves as drinks curator at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, and she hosts her own drink and learn walking tours of New Orleans. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Reading through your book, it was so clear that in New Orleans, history and alcohol sort of mixed together. And as the tour guide, I think you function as the swizzle stick. Tell us just about this whole notion that booze is part of the New Orleans story.
When folks take my Drink and Learn tour, I tell them that it's 2 hours, 3 centuries, 4 drinks. And that seems daunting, but it is, in fact, doable. So while I would argue that almost any city can have its history organized through and presented through drinks, drinks are an integral part of a lot of culture historically and currently. But in New Orleans, we seem to kind of ratchet that up a little extra. Starting from really the founding of the colony, New Orleanians learned very early on, France was disappointed in the colony. We didn't really have any profitable crops or commodity to ship back to France. And so they left us alone quite a bit. And if you're on your own in a mosquito-ridden swamp and life is pretty tough with death hovering around the corner, then drinking is going to ameliorate your lot. And while it would be nice to get brandy coming from France, the brandy and wine that you might know, well, frankly, rum from the Caribbean was much easier to access. And so from the earliest days of the colony, people are drinking to anesthetize themselves to a pretty difficult life.
The city is founded in 1718, and back then the colonies were more Protestant, and New Orleans happened to be more Catholic, and it was happened to also be settled by, according to your book, a motley mix of convicts and smugglers and prostitutes and so on. It just seems like all the conditions were ripe for this kind of a little bit of let the good times roll and a little bit of escapism through alcohol.
Indeed, one of the last French governors, Kerouac, who was sent over to clean up things in the colony, wrote back to the king and said, if I send home all of the disreputable colonists, then Louisiana would be empty, would be bereft of people. The stage is set very early on for a group of folks who are happy to engage in what might be viewed as licentious or excessive or disorderly behavior. And it's coupled with a colony that isn't governed much. Spain eventually takes over.
Well, there's certainly no Puritans. I mean, you'd have the Puritans and everything in the colonies.
Sure, right. So you have the American colonies settled by very disciplined Protestants are nothing like the gamblers and smugglers and prostitutes.
Let's take it now, Elizabeth, to the 19th century, the 1800s. And you've got this sort of demographic compost pile of convicts and smugglers and very thirsty troublemakers. And then you got New Orleans, which is, I understand, according to your book, the only place that had no closing hours and you could drink in the streets. That was unique among American cities. And I guess people got this notion that, hey, you can go down to New Orleans and just it's no holds barred.
Yes, here come the Americans. Once we become part of the United States, again, this idea that New Orleans doesn't really fit in to the typical American cultural paradigm, and it really plays on that. It is really one of the first cities that begins to use what we would now call marketing in tourism and to encourage folks to come down here and have a different kind of good time.
What did music have to do with that? Because we all also think jazz in New Orleans. Was that part of the mix?
Sure. Yeah, so the first jazz recording is in 1917, and that is coupled with the demise of Storyville, which was a vice district that operated for 20 years on the edge of the French Quarter. Storyville is arguably the birthplace of jazz. Louis Armstrong, King Oliver are all playing there, and those folks eventually move to a district that is open into the French Quarter, settling on Bourbon Street. And Bourbon Street really comes into its own as an entertainment district. in the early part of the 20th century.
Okay, so New Orleans is just sort of amping up here, and suddenly you've got Prohibition. So what did that do to the momentum here for the party scene?
Well, it was generally agreed upon by anyone in charge of enforcing Prohibition that doing so in New Orleans was an exercise in futility. There was a federal agent named Izzy Einstein who was sent around the country to see how long it took him to get a drink. In New York, it took him 14 minutes. In New Orleans, it took him 35 seconds. Mm. And that is a pretty telling anecdote that crystallizes. It was so easy to drink here because we're a coastal city and the Caribbean is like right there. So it was very easy to bring in not only rum, but any products from Europe, because, of course, the Caribbean's controlled by Great Britain at that time, Jamaica, Bermuda. So you could get anything from Europe. And it was a wet city.
The locals have this almost like a Second Amendment fervor for being able to drink freely. It's their right to be able to have that drink. And this Go Cup is like a New Orleans icon. Tell us a little bit about the context of the Go Cup and what is it?
So, Rick, most Americans don't know that drinking on the street was actually legal, was permitted in most of the United States until the 1960s. Public drinking was okay. Public drunkenness was not. Mm. But starting in the 1950s, 60s, cities began to enact ordinances, really in an attempt to control vagrancy. And these ordinances began banning public drinking. However, it's right around this time that Bourbon Street, which is a pedestrian thoroughfare, emerges as this, frankly, very lucrative entertainment district. And so New Orleans was reluctant to ban public drinking at the very time that the, you know, golden goose was showing up in the form of the Go Cup.
Okay, and when you say lucrative, you're really saying lots of booze being sold freely.
Yes, and not only booze being sold, but you're having people who are then coming into clubs, who are going into restaurants. And so it isn't only buying the drink and walking on the street. It is keeping yourself in an area. And if you're strolling, say you're not going to get in a cab or you're not going to drive away, then you are keeping your money in this area as well.
To go cup, is that just any kind of a disposable cup that a bar will serve a drink in so you can leave with it?
Yes, but a lot of bars now will brand those cups. People will take them home. Here in New Orleans, during Carnival, a lot of the Mardi Gras groups, which we call crews, will throw dozens and dozens of these cups.
Okay.
They are our form of crystal.
And it's sort of a declaration of a civil liberty to be able to have that cup in your hand and walk through the park, walk from one establishment to another, get into a taxi with it, whatever.
It is. It's very civilized. And the other thing is, and I think that for your listeners who have been to European cities, New Orleans is a very, very walkable place. And walking with a drink in your hand slows you down. And it allows you to pause and appreciate your surroundings. Maybe you might notice the wrought iron balcony or the beautiful shutters or the unusually painted house, or you stop for that street musician. The journey from one bar to the other is as much a part of your experience in the city as being in the bar itself.
You know, you're right. Now that I think of it, a big part of the joy that I remember of being in New Orleans was standing in the street with my drink listening to great musicians.
It is an integral part of the New Orleans experience as much as eating good food and hearing good music.
Louisiana native and cocktail historian Elizabeth Pierce is our guest on Travel with Rick Steves. She hosts Drink and Learn New Orleans Walkin' Tours and writes the Drink Dat Guide. It's part of a 5-volume series of Dat books detailing the seductive enticements that bring about 20 million visitors a year to New Orleans for a good time. There's more about Elizabeth's tours at drinkandlearn.com. Elizabeth, how long have you lived in New Orleans?
I grew up about an hour from New Orleans, just north of the city, across Lake Pontchartrain.
So you've known it and loved it all your life, it sounds
so
like.
So I have. I love New Orleans like a person.
Is it as lovable after Katrina as it was before? How has it changed? Is the soul any different?
That is a complex question that I will do my best to answer in a few sentences. Okay. Katrina wrought a lot of change. And some of that change involved a lot of people coming here, some to help with recovery, who then fell in love with the city and stayed and brought with them their ideas about what a city can be. And they brought those ideas from afar. New Orleans has not historically been a city that has looked outside for ideas about how to be. And so that is something that has transformed the landscape both professionally. We have a tremendous amount of entrepreneurship that's happening in the city, education-wise. And for some people, the changes that happened with Katrina did not go well. There are people who are left out of the benefits, but there are also a lot of changes that have been good for the city. And I think that bringing the city into the spotlight of the nation, frankly, the country was forced to confront that this is a very special, unusual, particular place that is worth not only saving. I think we're kind of past the saving part, but definitely worth savoring. And I think that a lot of people who may still believe that, I don't know, there's water in the streets or something, that was a long time ago, should come down and discover that we aren't just Bourbon Street. We aren't just people having way, way, way too much to drink endlessly. That there's a rich culture here that stands apart from anywhere else in the United States, but we are still part of you, and you should come here. It's, as our Convention Visitors Bureau might argue, you know, it's cheaper than Paris.
Ah, okay. And now Katrina struck back in 2005, and I know it might not be the spin of the tourist board, but if somebody was to complain that the soul of New Orleans was just devastated by this and it's never recovered, what would you say to that?
Well, I would say the city's burned twice. We've been through war, carpetbaggers. We've had other hurricanes, other disasters. And I would argue the core of what New Orleans is, which is a place that values the interaction between people, between friends and family, a city that encourages its residents to just step outside, feet on the street, to literally dance in the street, that does not look askance at that, a place where people spend weeks planning their costumes for carnival, where the sound of the city is being supported in this really tremendous organization called the Roots of Music, where elementary and middle school children are being schooled in New Orleans brass band, traditional sound. There is a lot that is vibrant and present, and that the soul of the city,
sounds
the
like
soul
it's
of
resilient.
The city is still very, very alive.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Elizabeth Pierce. Her book is Drink Dat New Orleans, a guide to the best cocktail bars, neighborhood pubs, and all-night dives. Boy, researching this guidebook must have been just brutal. You had to go to all these bars and get to know them. Of course, you've been doing this for many years, and you're a tour guide that takes people on drink and learn tours. You decided to eliminate music spots and strip clubs and focus on drinking atmosphere to find your favorite bars and watering holes. And you also talk about all-night dives. What's your favorite watering hole from a drinking atmosphere place? And then what's your favorite all-night dive?
The place where I would have the last drink of my life is French 75 at Arno's restaurant, because it's beautiful, it's intimate, it's romantic. I have tons of wonderful memories there. Their bar program actually won a James Beard Award. I've never had a bad drink there. A lot of people talk about last meal, but I like to think about the last drink.
And what is your last drink again?
Oh, so my last drink would be an old fashioned, what my mother drinks, and I do too.
And then what about an all-night dive? Because I found that interesting. That was in the subtitle of your book, All-Night Dives.
I would send your readers and your listeners to a place that is unlike any place that I bet they have ever been. It is called Snake and Jake's, and you don't go early. I went at midnight when I wrote the Snake and Jake's entry, and that was early. It wasn't beginning to fill up at all. Snake and Jake's is outside of the French Quarter, so you're getting a very local experience. Granted, there are often a lot of Tulane kids who might end up there, but also a lot of folks that live, it's way, way uptown. And it was two bars that combined into one. There was Snake's Bar and Jake's Bar. It isn't attractive, but the drinks are incredibly cheap, and you can visit with the bartender. He will sound like he is from New Orleans. the great like New Orleans accent. It's the kind of bar, and I think this is true across the country and frankly across Europe, particularly in the UK, where neighborhood bars and really neighborhood kind of divey bars are getting pushed out through gentrification, through, you know, I can make more money if I have a parking lot here. Snake and Jake's is in a neighborhood, and that bar could never be created there.
So a dive would be a bar that has a neighborhood personality, a local following, and has not invested a lot of money to spiff it up and make it feel fresh and new.
Exactly, right. Exactly. But that you will run into people, if you live in the neighborhood in particular, you will run into people that you know. Mm. And these places are places of community. They are third places.
Ah, sounds good. And Elizabeth, we're just about out of time, but I'd like you to give me just the story, the Sazerac, the Hurricane, and the Pimm's Cup. What can you tell me about these classic, sort of iconic New Orleans drinks?
So the Sazerac is the official cocktail of New Orleans, passed by the Louisiana legislature in 2008. And every ingredient in it, from the bitters that were created by Antoine Peychaud, Herb Saint, created by Marion Lejean, with a home at the Sazerac Bar, it is grounded in the city. The Hurricane comes out of Prohibition, a time when no one could get any whiskey. No whiskey was made during Prohibition, and none was made during World War II either because of the war effort. And so Pat O'Brien, who ran a bar of the same name, creates this rum-based cocktail to use up all the rum instead of the whiskey. And the Pimm's Cup, it isn't a New Orleans drink, although it's very popular. It's invented in England. But the owner of the Napoleon House, Mr. Impastato, he didn't like drunks. So he pushed the Pimm's Cup as a light, low-booze drink and encouraged New Orleanians to drink it. And now it is so popular, you'll see it on tons of menus around the city. And in fact, the Napoleon House is Pimm's largest North American account.
Whoa.
That is how much Pimm's we go through in New Orleans.
And just to wrap things up, I want to just, I'm your guest. You're going to take me, and we're just going to be in the very touristy Bourbon Street. And I just want to go to your favorite sort of experience nestled in that touristy zone. Where would we go and why?
We're going to go a half a block off Bourbon Street on Conti to the Aaron Rose. We're going to go on Thursday at 11 a.m. during their Wake Up and Live special. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. is their happy hour. My dear friend Rhiannon Enlil is going to be our bartender, and you might have a $3 mimosa or a Bloody Mary. I don't know what's your drink of choice, but we will be sitting next to a retired judge, a bartender who might be his day off, and he's having a little morning cocktail before he goes and runs some errands. And we'll also be sitting by visitors who are asking Rhiannon for some advice. The Aaron Rose is tiny, and it is a haven. Even though it is merely steps from Bourbon Street, it feels your place.
Wow, it sounds like just a wonderful New Orleans experience. Elizabeth Pierce, what an exciting book for anybody going to New Orleans. Drink That, New Orleans. Thanks so much, and I can really wish you happy travels.
Thank you. Drop me off in New Orleans.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tanton, Kaz Murhall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Thanks to our colleagues at the CBC in St. John's in Toronto and at WWNO New Orleans for their help this week. When you're on a road trip, you can listen to Travel with Rick Steves on one of more than 500 other radio stations. You'll find a list of where and when at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.